Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 558 to finish at 24,388. S&P 500 down 62 to close at 2,633. NASDAQ Composite down 219 to finish at 6,969. Russell 2000, small and mid-caps down 29 at 1,448. Yield on the 10-year Treasury down 3 basis points at 2.85%. Oil up 86 cents at $52.35 per barrel. And gold up $10.80 at $12.49 per ounce. Jobs report Friday. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported the economy added 155,000 jobs in November, with the unemployment rate unchanged at 3.7%. With a modest downward revision to the job growth reported for the prior 2 months, down 12,000 combined, the average over the last 3 months was 170,000. That's a pretty clear slowing from the 204,000 average rate over the last year. Payroll growth in 2018 still on track to beat the previous year's average monthly gains of 182,000 positions, might even surpass 2016's average monthly increase of 195,000. What's more, the economy is on track to produce the most new jobs since 2015. November was the 98th month of job creation in a row. That's a record. And while 155,000 new jobs missed estimates, it was a bit disappointing. It isn't really a problem. Even if the U.S. were just adding 150,000 jobs a month, it's a lot more than the country needs to supply everyone entering the labor force with a job. High school and college graduates, immigrants, moms returning after an extended absence, retirees looking for side work. All we really need to do is add about 100,000 new jobs each and every month to keep everybody employed. Average hourly earnings, a closely watched sign of whether inflation pressures are building, again rose at a 3.1% pace from a year ago. But that's the biggest advance since 2009. Monthly earnings gain of 0.2% fell short of estimates for a 0.3% increase. The average work week edged lower by 0.1 hours to 34.4 hours. At the same time, the flush of new jobs is contributing to the fastest pay gains for workers in about 9 years. The amount of money the average worker earns rose 6 cents to $27.35 an hour last month. The annualized rate for the last 3 months, September, October, November, compared with the prior 3 months, up 3.3%. With inflation likely falling back to near its core rate of 2% due to lower energy prices, this allows for modest real wage gains. On the flip side, there was a modest drop in the length of the average work week in November, so the average weekly wage actually dipped just slightly. A separate gauge that includes discouraged workers and those holding part-time jobs for economic reasons, the U6 unemployment rate, sometimes called the real unemployment rate, rose from 7.4% to 7.6%. Now, the number of involuntary part-time workers rose by 181,000, putting it 423,000 above the low reported in August. Voluntary part-time employment fell by 604,000, putting it below year-ago levels. Other data in the household survey were mixed. The duration measures of unemployment all fell, with the median duration at 8.9 weeks, tying its low for the recovery. The percentage of unemployment due to voluntary quits also edged downward to 11.8%. This measure of workers' confidence in their job prospects is consistent with the low overall unemployment rate. It was over 14% in 2000, peaked at 15.2% in April of that year. On the whole, this is a mostly positive report indicating a decent pace of job growth. but items like the low share of voluntary quits and the drop in hours provide some evidence of weakness. Some slack still remains in the labor market. The labor force participation rate was unchanged in November at 62.9%. This is the percentage of the working age population in the labor force. Both the overall and prime ages, ages 25 to 54, employment to population ratios were unchanged in November at their highs for the recovery. Within the prime age population, there have been notable differences in employment patterns over the last year. Overall, the employment population ratio is up by 0.7 percentage point over the year. Monthly data are erratic for subgroups, so taking three-month averages finds the sharpest increase is for men and women between the ages of 25 and 34, seeing a rise of 1 percentage point for both. The employment gains in the establishment survey were broadly based. Healthcare added 32,100. It's a bit more than its average of 27,400 over the last year. Professional firms beefed up staff by 32,000. Manufacturing added 27,000. Employment in the manufacturing sector is up by some 288,000 from year-ago levels. That's a 2.3% advance. Restaurants added 21,200. Retail added 18,200. First increase in 3 months. And employment in the transportation industry climbed by 25,000. Delivery companies like FedEx and UPS geared up for the holiday shopping season. Job growth in construction was weak, just 5,000. That's consistent with falling housing starts we've seen lately. There was also a drop of 8,200 in the number of workers in state and local education. Employment in public education is up by just over 0.1% over the past year. Employment fell slightly in government and an energy industry coping with lower oil prices. Now, stocks dropped today. This morning, as the jobs numbers were announced, the futures markets initially bounced just a little. The thinking, perhaps, was that the report was a little disappointing and might allow the Fed to take a more dovish stance toward tightening monetary policy in 2019. In this scenario, bad news is good news. That pretzel logic didn't last long. Until recently, American stocks have been something of a standout performer among global markets. The S&P 500 stock index was up 9.6% well into September. But over the last few months, those gains have disappeared as investors began to assess the potential fallout from a trade war between the U.S. and China. Also, rising interest rates and slowing corporate profits. Gains evaporated this morning as the issue of a trade war resurfaced. Peter Navarro, the director of the White House Trade Office, said that the United States would increase tariffs on Chinese imports if the two countries could not reach an agreement on trade by the end of a 90-day negotiating period. Trump and President Xi Jinping of China had agreed on Saturday to the standstill on new tariffs, but confusion about the nature of the agreement has only added to recent volatility in the stock markets. At any rate, it's unlikely the U.S. and China can forge a new trade deal in less than 90 days. Investors worry that the trade war between the U.S. and China could start to pinch corporate earnings and economic activity even more than it has to date. But that conflict has been building throughout 2018. Now, moving forward, it'll be hard for companies to match their earnings results from earlier in the year. The tax cut that has lifted corporate earnings and economic growth in 2018 won't be repeated in 2019, meaning a harder slog for companies seeking higher profits. Growth will slow unless companies develop ways to extract greater productivity from their workforce, which would be great for long-term economic prospects, but it isn't really the kind of thing you want to count on. Markets are also focused on the Fed tightening. 3 years' worth of interest rate increases by the Federal Reserve are finally starting to pinch interest rate-sensitive sectors, particularly housing, the auto industry, and companies with heavy debt loads. After years in which the economy has become heavily tilted toward industries that depend on low interest rates, a potential painful rebalancing is underway. Now, many investors fear the Fed underestimated the risk to the market and that policymakers now have an ordained path for monetary policy. They're playing catch-up. Now, whether the Fed is open-minded and flexible and data-driven, or if the Fed is rigidly determined to raise rates, it really doesn't matter. The Fed has a difficult and dangerous path ahead. And unfortunately, soft landings after rate hike cycles are as rare as unicorns, and virtually all modern rate hike cycles have resulted in a recession or financial or banking crisis. There is no reason to believe that this time will be any different. When central banks set interest rates and hold them at low levels in order to create an economic boom after a recession, as our Fed has done, they interfere with the organic functioning of the economy and financial markets, which has serious consequences, including the creation of distortions and imbalances. By holding interest rates at artificially low levels, the Fed creates false signals that encourage the undertaking of businesses and other endeavors that wouldn't be profitable or viable in a normal interest rate environment. The businesses or other investments that are made due to artificial credit conditions are known as malinvestments, and they typically fail once interest rates rise to normal levels again. Some examples of malinvestment are dot-com companies in the late 90s tech bubble, failed housing developments during the mid-2000s, and the unfinished skyscrapers in Dubai. Now, it can be difficult to tell precisely which investments or businesses are malinvestments in a central bank-distorted economy, but a quote by Warren Buffett might be applicable here. He said, "Only when the tide goes out do you learn who's been swimming naked." For the week, the Dow down 4.5%, S&P 500 down 4.6%, NASDAQ down 4.9%, biggest weekly decline for all three benchmarks since March. Worst start to a December since 2008. Friday saw the Dow drop 558 points to close at 24,388, S&P 500 down 62 at 26,33, NASDAQ down 219 at 69,69. The economy added 155,000 jobs in November, the unemployment rate 3.7%. Thanks for joining us today for the review.